Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his name in his honor. Although Brian left us over 2 years ago, we try to preserve Brian's roundtable format by adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Zooming in from their homes on Vachon right now are political luminary Kevin Jones of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, who collectively strive to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. And the man who puts story in the word history, president of the Vachon Heritage Museum and many other things, Bruce Hallman. Truman O'Brien is with us. He is enjoying his first return to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland, Oregon, after several years of dealing with COVID and the whole Shakespeare Festival sort of going on hold for a while. And he's joining us via Zoom from his bucolic B&B in Ashland, Oregon. I'm your host.
Good morning.
I'm your host, Crash Craig Bellis, running the board from the Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. Also joining us today via Zoom is Nancy O'Connor, president, and Steve Bergman, secretary from Zero Waste Vachon. Zero Waste Vachon is dedicated to reducing the amount of stuff we produce in addition to other aspirations. We will be talking to Steve and Nancy here in just a little while on our small talk section segment. But before we do that, we like to check in with everybody and see what's going on in their world in the past week. Kevin, what have you been up to?
I have to say that just right before the show today, I got a call from a fellow that I have not had a chance to cross paths with for 5 or 6 years. He is a boater. He's from Sudan. He moved to the Northwest to sail single-handedly up to Haida Gwaii, and either by the inside or the outside passage up Vancouver Island. Fascinating to hear the stories that he's told. He's also a mountaineer. I never realized that Sudan has mountains, but as a youth, that's where he climbed. And so, yeah, I'm just totally thrilled that he was able to get back in touch. And, you know, so we're looking for maybe a little more outdoor adventures, either on the mountains or the water. So that's totally on top of mind for me right now. Thanks for asking.
That's cool. Interesting. Bruce, what about you with your New Zealand background? I take it you're not in Christchurch or Auckland at this moment.
Oh, I wish. The background behind me on my Zoom screen is the interior of the marae where we teach in New Zealand. So it's a very interesting site. But it's been an interesting week for me. Sort of two things going on. One, just enjoying this late summer sort of amazing weather we've been having, but also notice that the ospreys seem to have disappeared. So it's a real harbinger of fall is on the way when the ospreys begin to take off. Or if they haven't taken off, they're not around like they were earlier. So the other thing, and Kevin would appreciate, and Craig, you and Truman will too, and perhaps Steve and Nancy, I've been wrestling with the electronics on my boat, installing new electronics and new NEMA 2000 communication systems that link all the electronics together so that your radio and your GPS and your depth sounder all work in sync, are supposed to work in sync. So it's been an interesting week for an old guy like me trying to get up with new technology. It's not always easy.
Well, those boats just love the salt water too.
Yeah. When you say in sync, Bruce, you mean S-I-N-K sync, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good luck with that. Hopefully that's coming along, Bruce.
It's coming.
That can be frustrating. Truman, how about you? We're looking at him sitting out here, on a deck with an umbrella over your head. What's up?
Yeah, I'm at the wonderful B&B that we've been coming to for more than 20 years, and gotten to be very good friends with the innkeepers. The husband of the couple is a flight attendant for Alaska, so he and I work together. That's how we got started coming here years ago, but. We did something really that we've never done before. We've been coming here for, well, since 1979, believe it or not. And not only do they have the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which is always wonderful, but this year we actually went to the Cabaret, which they have, that's separate from the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. We went last night, and it's a wonderful venue. They have tables, you can have dinner, or you can just have dessert and drinks, you know, with the play. And the play was Sherlock Holmes, five-person play, three of them playing multiple parts, and it was absolutely hilarious. We have never had so much fun at a play, I think, ever. And so I just have to recommend that any of you who happen to come to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, don't miss the Cabaret, because it is really, really special.
That is a great tip. I'm going to be down there visiting my children and grandchild here in November, and I think that's something I'm going to take up.
If it's still running, Craig, do not miss it. You will laugh yourself silly. Yeah, really, it's very, very good.
That's great to hear. Good. I'm glad you're having a good time and back there after a few years. I'm looking forward to being down there myself. Nancy, what have you been up to this last week?
Oh gosh, I would say the most exciting thing was I have been participating in the Green Team at Chautauqua, which is the group of fourth and fifth graders who are interested in environmental issues. And this is my third year doing it. We were on hold for a couple of years with COVID, but this year at our first meeting, we had 39 students,
wow,
which is huge and so exciting. The first year was six students, so that gives you some idea. So the thought that the schools are going to be open, you know, post-COVID to participating in some of these extracurriculars, and the fact that there's so much interest on the part of these young folks, you know, to do something for the environment. That was really a high point for me this week. That was actually last Wednesday, but yeah.
Great. Hey, Nancy, is Amy Bogard still sort of heading up that work?
She is. Fantastic. The rock star of the Green Team. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And McMurray, we have a new person heading up the McMurray Green Team, which had been, I think, fairly quiet for a couple of years. And so we're hoping that will get ramped up as well. Her name is also Amy, and I cannot remember her last name at this moment, but we're
Amy Holmes.
Amy Holmes. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. So that's real exciting.
Great to hear that.
We try to have a community brain and memory, because some of us are yes, some of us, right, are a little older and
it's very helpful.
Which ones of us?
not you, yeah, not you, saying, of course, Kevin. Steve, right. Steve, what have you been up to this last week?
Well, I've been trying to spend as much time on the beach as possible, checking out all the new rocks that are exposed every time the tide comes in and changes everything up for us. But been doing a little bit of traveling out to the beach down in Oregon and back from that, enjoying that with the family.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, nice. Trying to get those last few breaths of summer in.
Exactly.
And we have had one heck of a fall so far. Speaking,
it's been beautiful.
Bruce, speaking of the ospreys departing from Vashon, reminds me of the swallows returning to Capistrano. We had a hawk actually fly into our house, came right up to one of those hanging screen things and sort of pushed his way halfway in and then turned around and left again. Thankfully, we didn't have to try to get him out of the house. But it's nice. The wildlife is coming right into our home here. Kevin, did you have a comment?
Craig, do you have small pets or something?
Do we have pets?
Yeah. Do you have small pets in your home?
We have, we have three cats, but none of them are small. They're quite large. Yeah, I know. We've got those. And then we've got two large dogs. So I doubt that maybe he saw the size of our cats and turned around and left.
Probably why he left.
I will have to say another nature story is that when I was out a couple weeks ago in the Bogachiel River Valley and was amazed at how many toads and frogs we saw, thinking that as a sign of forest health, I was just so happy to get back to Vashon. And we have a frog in our neighborhood. So it's always a pleasure to be able to hear the frogs croaking.
It is.
And I hear it's a tree frog and it's quite loud.
Well, it's funny. Yes. We have one of those right out the door where the hawk flew in that just makes the most incredibly loud croaking right outside the door. Hey, one other thing I did this last few days was I finally got back in our airplane. It took the FAA forever to get me my medical certification. And the moment I got it, I jumped in the airplane after we got our three-blade propeller balanced here the other day and tried to learn how to fly all over again. Made a bunch of landings just to get current, as they say. I was very pleased with how the way things worked. Today in history, today is National Cinnamon Bun Day, Taco Day, and Vodka Day. I don't recommend you do all three of those at the same time, but that is what's going on with our national days. Little reminder, it's 27 days till Halloween. It's 55 days till Thanksgiving, and it's only 85 days till Christmas. So you better go out there and reuse.
Start shopping.
I'm not gonna say go shopping. I'm gonna say reuse.
And how many days to the election?
Oh well, that's a good question. But that you're asking me to do math. somewhere between 27 and 55.
I think it's about 38.
Yeah.
They're close, okay. Somewhere in that range.
That does sound right. This day in history, in 1883, this was the first run of the Orient Express from Paris to Istanbul. Oh. I've looked into getting on that train today, but I'd have to take out a second mortgage, I think, in order to... to get a room or something on the Orient Express, but it does sound like the vacation of a lifetime. In 1957, on this day, the space race begins with the Soviet Union launching the first artificial satellite to orbit the Earth, Sputnik 1. You know, Sputnik 1 was about the size of a refrigerator. It was, 125 pounds or something like that. DART, satellite that we blasted into that little asteroid, that's about the size of a golf cart. That weighed in at about 1,200, 1,300 pounds. And I'm still anxious to hear whether or not they did knock that asteroid off its course somewhat. It'll be very interesting to see that. Also, in 1991, on this day, the Protocol on Environmental Protection to the Antarctic Treaty was opened for signature. It provided for comprehensive protection of the Antarctic environment. One last thing. I hear a foghorn. I don't know if you can hear it, but I can hear it. Today is the Christian feast of St. Francis of Assisi, Giovanni di Pietro di Bernardone, who lived from 1181 to 1226, died at the age of 45. Coincidentally, on November 29th of 1979, Pope John Paul II declared Francis the patron saint of ecology. And I think that is an excellent segue to our small talk segment today with our guests Nancy O'Connor and Steve Bergman. The Zero Waste Vashon website points out that Vashon's number one export is garbage. The good news is that Zero Waste Vashon is working hard to address the situation. Thanks to their board members, Nancy O'Connor and Steve Bergman, for joining us on Small Talk today to let us know more about how we can get to zero. Welcome, Nancy and Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are thrilled to have you with us today. Let me just start out right at the beginning, and which is kind of, there's really no option there. You do have to start out at the beginning, don't you? I want to ask you both, what motivated you to get involved with Zero Waste Vashon? What is it about Zero Waste Vashon that attracted you? Which would like to start out? You're looking at each other on the Zoom screen.
I'll start.
Okay.
So I've been a sustainability freak for a long time. And since moving here, I wanted to help our island become a model green community. And Zero Waste Vashon is a great way to help with that.
Wow, that's a good terse answer. Not run on. Good work. talk about less is more, more is less. You did subscribe to our philosophy. That's going to be hard to beat. Nancy, I'm not going to hold you to that same exact standard.
I was just going to say, so as a small child, I...
yeah. A little longer story.
Yeah. I was born in 19.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
At a very young age.
I have always been passionate about the environment, and actually even as a small child, and I was quite active with the recycling issue back in the late 90s in Seattle. And I backed away from that a bit. But then when I moved to Vashon, and that's been coming up on 10 years now, I really wanted to see what I could do to help Vashon handle their waste better. And so Zero Waste Vashon was the logical place to go for that, because they were already very active on this topic in the community. And so it's just been wonderful to be involved.
That's great. Bruce, did you have a question?
Yeah, I had a more, as a historian, give us a little background. How did Zero Waste get started? How long has it been around? Just a little bit of the background.
It was started in 2014 by Gib Damon and Julia Lakey, and help me here, Steve. Steve is my memory.
Jerry Henley.
Right.
And Rex Stratton.
Right. Yes. And
Terry Sullivan was involved early on, and Tag Gornall.
Vashon Luminaries All.
Wow. Right. Very much so. Yeah. And so that was started back in 2014.
Will Lockwood was part of the original crew.
I think so. Yeah. And he is involved to this day, as are Gib. So we've been just moving forward since then, getting a compost facility here on the island to help us make use of this resource that exists on the island has been a focus for a long time. And we also have come to focus quite a bit on plastic in the past, I would say, 4 years. So those are our two main drivers.
Well,
in addition to many other projects.
Yeah, let's talk about those a little bit. The single-use plastic product issue. What's the extent of the problem, and how is Zero Waste Vashon helping islanders reduce single-use plastic?
Well, believe it or not, nearly a seventh of our Vashon garbage is going to the landfill is plastics. The average Vashon resident contributes about 200 pounds of plastics to our waste stream each year. I mean, these numbers just blow me away. And we all know that plastics are made from fossil fuels, and all the environmental impacts of these fossil fuels are included in every piece of plastics we use. So we should remember, though, that there are good plastics and bad plastics, but single-use plastics are the evil in the plastics category. We think the best solution is to avoid their use. During COVID, though, we were forced to use a lot more single-use plastics, and now we're more knowledgeable about the COVID spread. We need to get back to more sustainable practices for plastics. So you might remember our partnership with Island Coffee Shops a few years ago, prior to COVID, the Bring Your Own Mug program. Everybody benefited from that, and it was a great program, and I see a lot of people bringing their own mugs to the coffee shops in Vashon, so we can hopefully do a lot more of our BYO.
Kevin.
Yeah?
You know, Steve, I'll have to, so I joined, I went to the good side, not as I'm more too soon. I should have done the plastic recycle thing much earlier. My waste stream is like cut in half. It's like I have this canister where the plastics go. And when you push the plastic down and it mushrooms back up, right? And you come along with some more plastic, you push it down, you tackle it, you put it in a bag, you strap it with tape. It's amazing how much plastic waste goes into that bag that I fortunately have a chance now to bring to a zero waste Vashon.
So it's overwhelming, but what we're really talking about here is reducing. We want to reduce these single-use plastics so you don't have to get them recycled. That's the key here. And so to do that, we're working with Celia Congdon and her anti-plastics group to increase awareness about this important issue. And hopefully we can finally get back on track to bring our own mugs on the island. And so stay tuned this year to learn about a year-long campaign to reduce single-use plastics on the island.
Truman?
Yeah, so just to be clear, a single-use plastic would be like a plastic cup or straw or that sort of thing that you would use once and then toss. My question gets to, what about packaging, the plastic packaging? That's single-use as well. I mean,
exactly.
How in the world do you avoid that?
Nancy.
Yeah. So part of this work with Celia, which she's initiated this effort and is working with Zero Waste Vashon and some other environmental organizations, there will be a different area of focus or a different item of focus every couple of months. And one of the items of focus is plastic packaging. And so it's a tricky one because we all bring it home, you know, and it does provide convenience to us, but we can also make conscious choices when we go mostly to the grocery store and look at something we're picking up and saying, okay, is there a less packaged alternative to this? Can I get this in the bulk section? You know, do I have to buy my rice in a plastic bag or can I bring my glass container and just fill it up with the rice? Those sorts of decisions, you know, we can make in our shopping habits. It's not easy, but if we chip away, you know, habitually bit by bit, we can make an improvement there. We can also, and I think we're going to talk about this later, but there's also legislation called extended producer responsibility laws that will put some of the onus on the producers to produce less packaging. You know, does it really need to be shrink wrapped and taped and the inner seal and, you know, so anyways, we can talk about that later, but it's a tough one for everyone.
You know, it is, and I appreciate the fact that you're trying to address the issue kind of from its source rather than solely on the issue of recycling, because obviously recycling, which I'm, you know, I'm certain that you encourage and do everything you can to get people to do that, is not easy with regards to plastics. We have multiple bags in our basement for certain plastics, certain colors of plastics, hard plastic caps, that sort of thing, so that we can the rules change from time to time as to what you can and can't put together. Plus, you have fairly, I know a lot of rather progressive, enlightened individuals on the island who don't recycle at all. They've just never got into the habit, which is unfortunate. And I assume that Zero Waste attempts to educate and address individuals in that regard as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Reduce, reuse, and recycle are right at the top of our list.
Right.
There's a whole hierarchy that for best use.
Yep. Yep. Truman.
Yeah, the one of the questions I have, and I've been holding this, is I know that at the transfer station, they've had, for a long time, they had all the different colored glasses were separated and plastics were separated and cardboard. And now everything just goes into one big bin. Is that really recycling? And what do they do with that after they compact it in that container and haul it off? Do they actually recycle it?
So the reason that most systems in the country went away from the separated recycling is because they get better participation this way, because people are kind of lazy and they would much rather just, well, and also less space in their kitchen, all that sort of stuff. So it's easier from a consumer end to just throw it all in one container. It does cause problems. They currently will take all of that compacted, commingled stuff to a facility called a MRF, which is a material recycling facility. And they have an amazing amount of technology in these facilities that sorts and separates. They use magnets to pull the metal out. They use blowers to blow the paper off. They use gravity to drop off heavier stuff. They use flotation to float out certain types of plastics. So all this material goes through this really complex processing, and they pull out as much, you know, as they can. Now, that being said, there is more waste than if we were all individually separating. Particularly with glass, they're finding that's a problem because the glass gets broken and it's harder to handle. So there's down, but they get more volume because more people participate. So this is an issue that municipalities and manufacturers are, you know, really dealing with all the time. What's the best way to do this? We are really lucky. The hauler that handles the stuff that goes through the transfer station is called Recology. And they are very progressive and very conscientious and very involved in looking for local markets for all of the products that they take in. So they are one of the best ones in the country. So we can feel comfortable that the things that we make the effort to recycle are in fact going to markets to be recycled.
Well, while we're on that subject, let me just jump into styrofoam and plastic recycling program that King County has and your discussions to add styrofoam and plastic recycling to their on-island program. What's the status of that?
Well, Zero Waste has been working with Nadine Edelstein annually to divert over 20 tons of plastics and over 1,000 cubic yards of styrofoam from the landfill for much better use. I mean, the magnitude of this program is just amazing. Last month, over 700 island households participated in our first Sunday event, dropping off over 8 tons of plastics.
But this
involves over 35 volunteers per month. And thanks to all the islanders who support us, we're really becoming victim of our own success, because we really need help. We've demonstrated the need and a solution, how to do it. And now we've been working closely with King County to transition the program to the transfer station. But the process is long and complicated because of staffing and safety issues and contracts and a lot of bureaucracy. But we remain optimistic and look forward to having an effective transition to the county.
Kevin, Truman, did you have a quick question or was that answered?
Well, go ahead and take Kevin's question, because mine's not necessarily related.
Yeah, Steve, I'm wondering, I suspect there's a lot of popular interest in having King County, having more capacity, right, to do that kind of recycling. Is there a role for individuals on Vashon to play, or is the negotiations like best left to the professionals at this point?
Well, right now, we're working closely with the right people at King County to work it through the bureaucracy, but it takes time. There are styrofoam recycling programs at Bow Lake and Shoreline at two other transfer stations in King County. So they're used to doing it elsewhere, and it's just a matter of getting it through all the hurdles here on Vashon.
Good. Yeah. I understand that.
Can I hop in to Kevin's question just for a second? Kevin, at some point, we may be asking for individuals to reach out and contact, the county or representatives, but it's probably best for us to get our ducks in a row about the specific ask before we, make that kind of an effort. I think that's always best, to be clear on what exactly we need help with and what we're asking for. But certainly all that community enthusiasm could be used to great benefit in trying to further this cause when the timing is right. Is that what you were?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yep. Thank you, Nancy. Just wanted to sort of check in on where people could be helpful. And sometimes being helpful just means standing back and morally supporting the process, not verbally supporting. So thanks.
Well, just to follow up on that particular topic before we get into an issue that we could spend hours on, which is the composting. You have a wonderful website, which is what, zero, what is exactly?
ZeroWasteVashon.org.
That's right. Okay. ZeroWasteVashon.org. And there's lots of opportunities for people to understand what you do and how to get involved and how to donate, on that website. Just wanted to remind people of that. Now let's Thanks. Move. Let's move on to.
Wait, before we do, I have one real quick question.
Okay, go ahead, Truman.
And that was Nancy. You were talking about the recyclers breaking out all these products by category, and then you said something about looking for a market for that. So my question is that a private market that comes and purchases that, or takes it for free, or how does that work?
Well, there's a whole system out there, just like any other commodity, like lumber or grain or whatever. There are commodity markets for recycled materials. So the product gets baled up, great big bales of plastic or bales of cardboard or, any of the materials. And then there are brokers who handle and purchase, that material, which then gets used in an industrial process to create something new.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was what I wanted.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about the composting facility that you've been working on for quite a few years. I think things probably got slowed down a little bit, like everybody else did with COVID. But what is the latest on the status of a composting, a centralized composting facility on the island?
Sure. So we're making good progress, and things have ramped up a bit recently. The county completed a feasibility study on the initial phases of that. They also did a survey of island residents to make sure that we were interested, which we showed them overwhelmingly that we were. They are now working with a consultant again on further analysis of a couple of potential sites at the transfer station property. That makes the most sense due to the infrastructure that's there and the fact that the waste products are already being handled there. So about a quarter of our garbage is food waste. Just a little background for folks that may not know. And currently, our alternatives for handling our yard waste are to handle it on your property or to take it to the transfer station. Some residents compost their food waste at home, although this isn't practical for everyone due to size or size constraints to their property or busyness or desire to do it. King County is paying over $250,000 a year to ship yard waste from Vashon to Cedar Grove, which is out in Maple Valley. And we would prefer that they spend those dollars to create a local island-sized compost facility. And that way we can save the carbon footprint of the transportation, and we can keep the compost on the island to enrich our local soils. And compost helps to sequester carbon in the soil. So there's a real win-win there. You know, currently we ship our stuff off and then we ship it back in plastic bags, and we buy it and we put it in our gardens. So the yard waste, the organic material, is a really unique thing in that it's a product that we produce on Vashon that we could use on Vashon, which is really the circular economy in action. So our ultimate goal is to have that facility here on the island producing the nice compost that we can use. We also want island residents to have the option of curbside organics pickup. So those green bins that you see other places, we do not currently have that option on the island. 99% of King County has that option. We have been accepted years ago for some reason that remains unclear, and we would like to have that option on our island so that people can put yard and food waste in a curbside bin and have it brought to the local facility. So that's sort of our ultimate goal.
Truman.
Yeah, I have a question about the end product. Now, I know that the Maple Valley facility produces product that they sell. I mean, black gold or whatever they call it, that you can buy a compost. Is your goal to do that on Vashon? And if so, would you be bagging it and selling it? Or would this be a bulk product, or how would that work?
The goal would be to sell it, because that would offset, you know, the cost of operation. At this point, there is no discussion of a bagging operation. That's sort of another level. So it would probably be a bulk pickup. The details of that have not been sorted out. Other facilities, community-sized facilities around the country, the bulk pickup can look like anything from a dump truck or, you know, a pickup truck load, or just bringing 5-gallon buckets and, you know, getting those filled up.
Kevin.
Does that have to be manned then, does personnel have to run that facility
then?
Yes,
there would definitely need to be personnel. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Nancy, you're talking about the green pickup for organic material. It kind of reminds me, I think there's a lot of material to be gathered out there. It just reminds me, in my previous neighborhood, our neighbors put out in the late summer, they had an overabundance of zucchini. So they put out a small cardboard box. It was about half full, free zucchini. And then when they came back that afternoon, the box was overflowing. There were zucchini out on the road. Everybody thought, oh, great. People can come. So, yeah, I think you're on the zucchini concept there.
That's the old deal about lock your cars. The zucchini is ripening.
The fall. That's right.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
There are some detractors and critics of the composting facility. Questions. And you just kind of brought it up in a way, Kevin. You need a certain amount of brush, don't you? That sort of material to mix with the food waste for this to work, to operate correctly.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you've got to get the community's got to kind of be trained, and we have to figure out if there's enough of one or the other to support it, and for it to work properly. The what about the whole issue that people are afraid of when they hear about composting of off gases and odor and rodents and noise and things like that? That's going to really put your quick answers to the test.
No, these are things, you know, of course, that we are concerned about and the county's concerned about. And, you know, anytime a compost facility is created, those are, you know, very valid concerns. The science of compost facilities has really, really advanced over the past 20 years. And there is so much knowledge behind it and technology behind it. And the understanding of how to keep the compost process balanced, because a balanced compost process is very much like Mother Nature, and it doesn't smell bad. You know, you go to the forest floor and you smell that forest floor and it smells nice. And that's what a good compost facility smells like. But as you alluded to earlier, the balance between the woody material and the food material, you know, needs to be just right. And I think one positive at the start of this is that we currently collect more woody material. The food material is going to be integrated gradually, you know, as we become more adept at collecting it and as our population becomes more adept. So we have the opportunity to work initially with more woody material and then add the food material and be very careful about how that is handled. So as I was saying, you know, good compost smells good. And some of the management systems that have been developed recently are reverse aeration and biofilters. And those are methods that are used to control any odors that might result beyond just maintaining that really good balance. And those can be very, very effective, to the point that there's, you know, a small facility, odor-wise, you shouldn't even know that it's there. The noise would be similar to that which normally occurs at the transfer station. You know, there will be backhoes. I mean, the transfer station already manages all of this waste. It's the same waste. It's just going to be handled in a slightly different way. So there's already, you know, backhoes and trucks and dumping and things like that that occur at the transfer station. So we don't think that the noise will be significantly different. And there's natural buffers there. There's a natural buffer of that big, huge closed landfill, that big hill that helps, you know, could potentially help to mitigate noise issues. And as far as the rodents go, that's an issue as well. The transfer station deals with rodents now. You know, you think about it, garbage goes there. It gets dumped on a floor. It gets moved around. It gets put in trucks. There's residue of garbage at the transfer station. So we would be kidding ourselves if we didn't think, you know, that there were some rodents involved in that process. And in order to have a compost facility now, you need to meet best management practices that are spelled out in the law. And the best management practices for compost facilities have proven to be effective at dealing with rodents. So there's a lot of pieces in place there. A lot of people who have gone down this road ahead of us, and we have the benefit of learning from it. You know, we are not early adopters at this point. There are a lot of compost facilities out there. So, you know, we're going to be learning the best techniques from a lot of other people.
Truman?
Yeah, this is a segue into what physically exactly is a compost facility. Is there a machine? Is there just a pile of garbage? What is this thing that makes the compost?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of different ways to make compost. The way that it has been recommended, given the anticipated volume and the approach was recommended by the consultants hired by the county, who are experts in this topic, is to use aerated static piles. So the way that works, and you can see pictures on the county webpage, is there's a concrete floor and there are pipes with holes in them, aerated pipes that run along the base of the concrete floor. And that's where the aeration system will either blow air to dry the compost or pull air through the biofilter if they're trying to mitigate any kind of odors. So the woody material gets mixed with the food products, the more wet material. Those get mixed by a backhoe, and then they get piled into these bays, which is basically some concrete blocks on three sides and the aerated floor underneath. So the pile is contained within the bays. And then once that pile is all mixed and balanced and they're comfortable with the mix, then they put a plastic cover over it. And that keeps the rain off. It keeps the critters from getting at it. And so it basically cooks under that plastic cover for a matter of weeks. And it reaches the point where heat is generated in there. And that kills off any of the bacteria that would be involved in, you know, decomposing food. That all gets killed off, and the composting process, all the microbes go to work, and that's what eats it up and turns it from, you know, an icky mess of food twigs into a nice loamy material. And so after that's done cooking, then it gets moved over to another spot where it cures. It basically cools down and then it would get screened, and the finer dirt particles are what people would want to put in their garden. The rough stuff that's still left over either is used more as a wood chip, or it gets reused as bulking material to start the process over again. That more than you wanted.
Yeah.
Was a lot.
Yes, and I have more questions, of course.
Okay.
One is there any plan to use the generated heat from that? That's the one question. And the other question is, we have a very large equestrian community on the island. And obviously equestrians produce quite a bit of compost, as it were. Is there any use of that material to be added to this, to the composting that you're doing?
Okay, two answers here. I am not aware of any effort to make use of the heat.
Of the heat.
It is a great idea, and there are some experimental efforts, particularly Washington State has a program where they have used that heat to like heat greenhouses where then they can grow things. That would be a nifty thing to think about down the road, but it's not part of our initial plan. As far as the horse manure goes, the trick with horse manure is that the hay I'm not a horse person, but I have learned about this. The hay that is produced in eastern Washington is required to be treated with Roundup. They have to use it out there. And Steve, you can jump in
I think it's clopyramide, this pesticide. It's not glyphosate. It's a different one.
Okay.
But it's a bad pesticide, and it's very long lived. And unfortunately, we don't want to contaminate our compost with bad stuff. So
what happens is that does not break down in a normal composting process. So if that material were to end up in compost and then you try to grow tomatoes, it will kill your tomatoes because it's designed to kill leafy plants. So that is the trick with manure. Now, apparently the hay produced in Western Washington is not treated in the same way. So, you know, if somehow Vashon could be an island that only brought on Western Washington hay, that might change. But right now, it's not something we can do.
This whole discussion, it seems fairly apparent that this whole process is not entirely automated. It's dependent to a certain degree or large degree on an operator who knows what they're doing. Is that correct? Or operators.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And it does run. It runs 24/7, doesn't it? Unlike the, it doesn't run 24/7.
I mean, but you don't need to be there all the time.
Okay. Okay.
No.
But the process, of course.
The process is going on when you're not there.
Yeah. Right, right there.
So would the same people that work at the transfer station do that work also, or would they be additional people?
That is also something that is being looked at, whether it would be transfer station employees or if the county would be interested or try to do some sort of a public-private partnership on that. And that's also being looked at.
You mentioned the problem with the Eastern Washington hay and the horse manure. Does the composting process kill all toxic seeds and invasive plants and whatnot that would get into the mix? Is that the theory?
Yes. It kills seeds. It gets to sufficient heat to kill the seeds. And we have specifically asked that of the consultants and said, what about Scotch broom? What about blackberries? You know, what about our invasives here? And we have been reassured that the heat, you know, created in this process effectively kills those.
It gets over 130 to 150 degrees Fahrenheit in the piles. So as long as it sits there for over a week or two, it's long enough to kill all that stuff.
Bruce?
But it's not hot enough to break down the chemicals that are in the
some chemicals, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's 8 more minutes left in the Brown Briefly before we end. Let me just ask you this. I think you'd made reference earlier to county or state regulations that you were looking at. What would you like to tell us about that?
Steve, was this you or me? I forget.
So we would like to see more extended producer responsibility policies enacted by our federal and state governments. These policies require producers to handle their products environmentally sustainable waste management ways. The Renew Act bill in Washington, Senate Bill 5697 or House Bill 2003 is in the committee phase right now. And both of these bills include product stewardship provisions, restrictions on styrofoam, and minimum recycled content requirements. So we urge everyone to write your legislator and support this bill.
All right. Well, thank you both. I mean, it's a huge topic, and we obviously could spend a lot of time on it. And I encourage you to stick with us for the last 6 minutes of our show while we solve the issues of the world.
Thanks so much for having us.
Oh,
thank you for having us.
You are very welcome, and thank you for being here. You know, we had a list of things that we put on our script that we want to potentially cover. The one that I do want to get into, I'm not going to get into the whole CMAR healthcare district issue. That one goes on and on and on, and we're going to have more on that. Well, on October 25th, we'll have the healthcare district back to talk about what's happening there. And then 2 weeks later, we're going to have representatives of CMAR come in and talk to us about what they're up to. So that should be interesting. So the October 25th for the local reps and 2 weeks later for CMAR reps. But on the national level, President Joe Biden warned in his September speech in Philadelphia outside Independence Hall that, quote, democracy cannot survive when one side believes there are only two outcomes to an election. Either they win or they were cheated. And that's where MAGA Republicans are today, end of quote. Lincoln said in his Gettysburg Address that we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether our nation can long endure. Question becomes, how does Republican insistence on supporting election deniers bode for our democracy if the Republican Party wins the House and or Senate in November? And more specifically, I wanted to mention this independent state legislature theory that is going to now appear before the United States Supreme Court in the case of Moore versus Harper, a case where the state representatives of North Carolina are challenging the Supreme Court of North Carolina's decision, which said that the gerrymandering done there was done unfairly and supported the Republicans. The independent state legislative theory that's being proposed by North Carolina in that case basically gives the states sort of ultimate authority as to how they run their elections, their national elections, and the state courts can't do anything about it. That's a huge question, but. Bruce, as the historian of the group, have you have a thought or two on all of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we are in times very similar to what the late 1850s was like, where the nation is incredibly divided over some very deep, deep-running issues. You know, immigration, voting rights, civil rights. You know, being woke or unwoke, however you want to position that. I mean, there are some deep divisions in this culture right now. And you know, in the 1850s, it took the Civil War to essentially resolve them. And they didn't fully resolve them because, you know, certainly the Civil War was not a boon for racial equality. I mean, it made huge strides forward, but it also led to some retrenchment. So, you know, my sense is we live in perilous times. The difficulty is, you know, the Republican sort of insistence on election integrity resonates with people. People don't want to feel like their vote doesn't count or feel like their vote's being stolen. So it's an incredibly important populist sort of appeal that's going on. And yet in reality, you know, election fraud is minimal, and most election fraud is by mistake, and it's, you know, it's in the tens or twenties or hundreds out of millions and millions of votes. So yeah, I think it's an incredibly important time. Yep.
Truman.
So my question would be, or my wonder would be, could we use that MAGA worry about the integrity of the elections to promote a national coverage or national laws when it comes to national elections and leave the state elections to the states? I mean, could we use that, their insistence to move that forward? It might be one way to work together.
Yeah, in effect, I mean, the Constitution, Craig, you might want to speak to this. Constitution gives state legislatures authority over regulating elections unless Congress passes a law that supersedes that. So, yeah, national legislation supersedes state legislation about elections.
Kevin, in a moment.
Yep. I'll say that, you know, there's a comfort in having elections run at the state level, so it's varying systems that are harder to tamper with. I'll also say that the notion of a political party using the notion of election deniers as a strategy doesn't seem to really turn out the vote. So I kind of wonder about that. But the one thing that I'll leave us with is Democracy in Chains, Nancy McLean, just one sentence from that book. The project must aim toward the practical removal of the sacrosanct status assigned to majority rule. This is a multi-decade conservative strategy to reduce the implications of voting in America. So, we're difficult times. I agree, Bruce.
And I opened up quite the can of worms there. I hesitate to give it such short shrift. But for Nancy, Steve, Kevin, Truman, and Bruce, I am Craig Bellis inviting you to join us next week for the next edition of the Brown Briefly, when our small talk guests will be Stacy Oaks, who will address the status of the Tacoma Liquefied Natural Gas Plant. With that, thank you and goodbye.